Chapter 5. How the possessor of the diamond is whisked into a magnificent chariot, and as yet further good luck, I sat on the back seat of the carriage, near a very nice young lady, about my dear Mary's age, that is to say, 17¾, and opposite us sat the old countess, and her other granddaughter handsome too, but 10 years older. I recollect I had on that day my blue coat and brass buttons, nankeen trousers, a white sprig waistcoat, and one of Dando's silk hats, that had just come in the year 22, and looked a great deal more glossy than the best beaver. And who was that hideous manster that was the way her ladyship pronounced, had odious vulgar wretch, with the iron heels to his boots, and the big mouth, and the imitation gold neck chain, who steered at us so as we got into the carriage. How she should have known that Gus's chain was mosaic I can't tell, but so it was, and we had bought it for 5 and 20 and 6 pence only the week before at M'Fail's, in St. Paul's Churchyard. But I did not like to hear my friend abused, and so spoke out for him, "Ma'am," says I, "that young gentleman's name is Augustus Hoskins. We live together, and a better or more kind-hearted fellow does not exist. You are quite right to stand up for your friends, sir," said the second lady, whose name, it appears, was Lady Jane, but whom the grandmama called Lady Jean. "Well, upon me conscience, so he is now, Lady Jean, and I like spared in a young man. So his name is Hoskins, is it? I know, my dears, all the Hoskinses in England. There are the Lincolnshire Hoskinses, the Shropshire Hoskinses. They say the Admiral's daughter, Belle, was in love with a black footman, or boatswain, or some such thing, but the world's so censorious. There's old Dr. Hoskins of Bath, who attended poor dear Drum in the Quincy, and poor dear old Fred Hoskins, the gouty general. I remember him as thin as a lath in the year 84, and as active as a harlequin, and in love with me, oh, how he was in love with me. You seem to have had a host of admirers in those days, Grandmama," said Lady Jane. "Hundreds, my dear, hundreds of thousands. I was the toast of Bath, and a great beauty too. Would you ever have thought it now, upon your conscience and without flattery, Mr. A. what do you call him?" "Indeed, ma'am, I never should," I answered, for the old lady was as ugly as possible, and at my saying this the two young ladies began screaming with laughter, and I saw the two great whiskered footmen grinning over the back of the carriage. "Upon my word, you're mighty candid, Mr. What's-your-name, mighty candid indeed, but I like candor in young people. But a beauty I was. Just ask your friend's uncle the general. He's one of the Lincolnshire Hoskinses. I knew he was by the strong family likeness. Is he the eldest son? It's a pretty property, though sadly encumbered. For old Sir George was the divil of a man, a friend of Hanbury Williams, and Littleton, and those horrid, monstrous, odious people. How much will he have now, mister, when the Admiral dies?" "Why, ma'am, I can't say, but the Admiral is not my friend's father." "Not his father, but he is, I tell you, and I'm never wrong. Who is his father, then?" "Ma'am, Gus's father's a leatherseller in Skinner Street, Snow Hill, a very respectable house, ma'am. But Gus is only third son, and so can't expect a great share in the property." The two young ladies smiled at this. The old lady said, "What? I like you, sir," Lady Jane said, "for not being ashamed of your friends, whatever their rank of life may be. Shall we have the pleasure of setting you down anywhere, Mr. Titmarsh?" "No ways particular, my lady," says one. "He have a holiday at our office today at least round and gave me and Gus leave, and I shall be very happy, indeed, to take a drive in the park, if it's no offense." "I'm sure it will give us infinite pleasure," said Lady Jane, though rather in a grave way. "Oh, that it will," says Lady Fanny, clapping her hands. "On it, Grandmama. And after we have been in the park, we can walk in Kensington Gardens, if Mr. Titmarsh will be good enough to accompany us." "Indeed, Fanny, we will do no such thing," says Lady Jane. "Indeed, but we will go, shrieked out Lady Drum. And I dying to know everything about his uncle and 13 aunts? And you're all chattering so, you young women, that not a blessed syllable will you allow me, or my young friend here to speak. Lady Jane gave a shrug with her shoulders, and did not say a single word more. Lady Fanny, who was as gay as a young kitten, if I may be allowed so, to speak of the aristocracy, laughed, and blushed, and giggled, and seemed quite to enjoy her sister's ill humor. And the Countess began at once, and entered into the history of the 13 Misses Haggarty, which was not near finished, when we entered the park. When there, you can't think what hundreds of gents on horseback came to the carriage and talked to the ladies. They had their joke for Lady Drum, who seemed to be a character in her way, their beau for Lady Jane, and, the young ones especially, their compliment for Lady Fanny. Though she bowed and blushed, as a young lady should, Lady Fanny seemed to be thinking of something else, for she kept her head out of the carriage, looking eagerly among the horsemen, as if she expected to see somebody. Aha! My Lady Fanny, I knew what it meant, when a young pretty lady like you was absent, and on the lookout, and only half answered the questions put to her. Let alone Sam Titmer, she knows what somebody means as well as another, I warrant. As I saw these maneuvers going on, I could not help just giving a wink to Lady Jane, as much as to say I knew what was what. I guess the young lady is looking for somebody, says one. It was then her turn to look queer, I assure you, and she blushed as red as scarlet. But, after a minute, the good-natured little thing looked at her sister, and both the young ladies put their handkerchiefs up to their faces, and began laughing, as if I had said the funniest thing in the world. Il est charmant, father monsieur, said Lady Jane to her grandmama, and on which I bowed, and said, Madame, vouse me fate spoke coup d'honneur. For I know the French language, and was pleased to find that these good ladies had taken a liking to me. I'm a poor humble lad, ma'am, not used to London society, and do really feel it quite kind of you to take me by the hand so, and give me a drive in your fine carriage. At this minute a gentleman on a black horse, with a pale face and a tuft to his chin, came riding up to the carriage. And I knew by a little start that Lady Fanny gave, and by her instantly looking round the other way, that somebody was come at last. Lady Drum, said he, your most devoted servant. I have just been riding with a gentleman who almost shot himself for love of the beautiful Countess of Drum in the year never mind the year. Was it Kilblazes? Said the lady. He's a dear old man, and I'm quite ready to go off with him this minute. Or was it that delight of an old bishop? He's got a lock of my hair now I gave it him, when he was Papa's chaplain. And let me tell you it would be a hard matter, to find another now in the same place. La, my lady, says I, you don't say so? But indeed I do, my good sir, says she, for between ourselves, my head's as bare as a cannonball, ask Fanny if it isn't. Such a fright as the poor thing got when she was a babby, and came upon me suddenly in my dressing room without my wig. I hope Lady Fanny has recovered from the shock, said Homebody, looking first at her, and then at me, as if he had a mind to swallow me. And would you believe it? All that Lady Fanny could say was, pretty well, I thank you, my lord. And she said this with as much fluttering and blushing as we used to say our Virgil at school, when we hadn't learned it. My lord still kept on looking very fiercely at me, and muttered something about having hoped to find a seat in Lady Drum's carriage, as he was tired of riding, on which Lady Fanny muttered something too, about friend of grandmama's. You should say a friend of yours, Fanny, says Lady Jane. I'm sure we should never have come to the park, if Fanny had not insisted upon bringing Mr. Titmarsh hither. Let me introduce the Earl of Tiptoff to Mr. Titmarsh. But, instead of taking off his hat, as I did mine, his lordship growled out that he hoped for another opportunity, and galloped off again on his black horse. Why the deuce I should have offended him, I never could understand. But it seemed as if I was destined to offend all the men that day, for who should presently come up, but the Right Honorable Edmund Preston, one of His Majesty's Secretaries of State, as I know very well by the almanac in our office, and the husband of Lady Jane. The Right Honorable Edmund was riding a grey cob, and was a fat pale-faced man, who looked as if he never went into the open air. "Who the devil's that?" said he to his wife, looking surlily both at me and her. "Oh, it's a friend of Grandmama's and Jane's," said Lady Fanny at once, looking, like a sly rogue as she was, quite archly at her sister, who in her turn appeared quite frightened, and looked imploringly at her sister, and never dared to breathe a syllable. "Yes, indeed," continued Lady Fanny, "Mr. Titmarsh is a cousin of Grandmama's by the mother's side. By the Haggarty side. Didn't you know the Haggartys, when you were in Ireland, Edmund, with Lord Bagwig? Let me introduce you to Grandmama's cousin, Mr. Titmarsh. Mr. Titmarsh, my brother, Mr. Edmund Preston." There was Lady Jane all the time treading upon her sister's foot as hard as possible, and the little wicked thing would take no notice, and I, who had never heard of the cousinship, feeling as confounded as could be. But I did not know the Countess of Drumnere so well as that sly minx her granddaughter did. For the old lady, who had just before called poor Gus Hoskins her cousin, had, it appeared, the mania of fancying all the world related to her, and said, "Yes, we're cousins, and not very far removed. Mick Haggarty's grandmother was Millicent Brady, and she and my Aunt Tozer were related, as all the world knows. For Decimus Brady, of Bolibrady, married an own cousin of Aunt Tozer's mother, Belle Swift, that was no relation of the Dean's, my love, who came but of a so family, and isn't that clear?" "Oh, perfectly, Grandmama," said Lady Jane, laughing, while the Right Honorable gent still rode by us, looking sour and surly. "And sure you knew the Haggartys, Edmund, the 13 red-haired girls, the 9 graces, and 4 over, as poor Clanboy used to call them. Poor Clan. A cousin of yours and mine, Mr. Titmarsh, and sadly in love with me he was too. Not remember them all now, Edmund, not remember? Not remember Biddy and Minnie, and Thetty and Witty, and Missy and Grizzy, and Polly and Dolly and the rest? D the Miss Haggartys, ma'am," said the Right Honorable gent, and he said it with such energy, that his grey horse gave a sudden lash out that well nigh sent him over his head. Lady Jane screamed. Lady Fanny laughed. Old Lady Drum looked as if she did not care twopence, and said, "Hervey right for swearing, you odious man, you. Hadn't you better come into the carriage, Edmund Mr. Preston?" cried out the lady, anxiously. "Oh, I'm sure I'll slip out, ma'am," says I, "pooh pooh." "Don't stir," said Lady Drum. "'Tis my carriage, and if Mr. Preston chooses to swear at a lady of my years in that odious vulgar way, in that odious vulgar way, I repeat, I don't see why my friends should be inconvenienced for him. Let him sit on the dickey if he likes, or come in and ride bodkin." It was quite clear that my Lady Drum hated her grandson-in-law heartily, and I remarked somehow in families that this kind of hatred is by no means uncommon. Mr. Preston, one of His Majesty's Secretaries of State, was, to tell the truth, in a great fright upon his horse, and was glad to get away from the kicking, plunging brute. His pale face looked still paler than before, and his hands and legs trembled, as he dismounted from the cob, and gave the reins to his servant. I disliked the looks of the chap of the master, I mean at the first moment he came up, when he spoke rudely to that nice gentle wife of his, and I thought he was a cowardly fellow, as the adventure of the cob showed him to be. Heaven bless you! A baby could have ridden it, and here was the man with his soul in his mouth at the very first kick. "Oh, quick! Do come in, Edmund," said Lady Fanny, laughing, and the carriage steps being let down, and giving me a great scowl as he came in, he was going to place himself in Lady Fanny's corner, I warrant you, I wouldn't budge from mine, when the little rogue cried out, "Oh, no, by no means, Mr. Preston. Shut the door, Thomas. And oh, What fun it will be to show all the world a Secretary of State riding bodkin. And pretty glum the Secretary of State looked, I assure you. Take my place, Edmund, and don't mind Fanny's folly, said Lady Jane, timidly. Oh no. Pray, madam, don't stir. I'm comfortable, very comfortable, and so I hope, is this Mr. this gentleman. Perfectly, I assure you, says one. Was going to offer to ride your horse home for you, as you seemed to be rather frightened at it. But the fact was, I was so comfortable here that really I couldn't move. Such a grin as old Lady Drum gave when I said that, how her little eyes twinkled, and her little sly mouth puckered up. I couldn't help speaking, for, look you, my blood was up. We shall always be happy of your company, Cousin Titmarsh, says she, and handed me a gold snuff box, out of which I took a pinch, and sneezed with the air of a lord. As you have invited this gentleman into your carriage, Lady Jane Preston, hadn't you better invite him home to dinner? Says Mr. Preston, quite blue with rage. I invited him into my carriage, says the old lady, and as we are going to dine at your house, and you press it, I'm sure I shall be very happy to see him there. I'm very sorry I'm engaged, said I. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.